today, Marcus Bartram, general partner at Telstra Ventures, joins us to talk about what investors look for in a cyber leader, the effects of the economy, and identity-based cyber threats. All this and more on
the CyberJack Podcast.
Marcus, thanks so much for joining us today. Really interested to hear your insights on venture capital investment in cybersecurity and to get your view on the current status of the industry at large. Before we get into that, can you share a bit about yourself and what you've been focused on in your role recently?
So I'm a GP in a venture capital fund called Telstra Ventures. We've been investing in sort of broader markets in cybersecurity, but in cybersecurity specifically since 2014, we invested in a CASB called Elastica with Rehan Jalil as the founder. And we've continued to sort of invest into that sector. And so I'll kind of explain my security background a little bit and then, you know, what we sort of saw and why we started investing there. So I'm an engineer by trade, work in a bunch of different industries, including sort of banking, industrial, and telecoms. And at different points in that career, have worked in a cybersecurity and run a little consultancy business, have tried to launch cybersecurity products into different markets. And you generally had a view on you know, kind of where the cybersecurity industry is going and how it sort of moved around. I think in at least in one of those jobs, we were deploying the very first versions of Net Forensics as an RDS and Checkpoint Firewall, the very first versions of Checkpoint Firewall. From a venture investment point of view, when we started out in 2012, we could just see the world of cybersecurity evolving as, you know, tools got cheaper, the threat landscape changed, and we could see this evolution of sort of technology, sort of IT technology, which I think is sort of a leading indicator to where cybersecurity is going, and where threats are going to come from and where innovation will occur. And that sort of idea, we wrote a paper about that in our fund, which led to a whole series of investments in the sector. And the IT world has continued to evolve and architectures have continued to change. And so we continue to see innovation and we continue to see, you know, criminal behavior change, and the economic incentive for criminal behavior has gone up. So we still think from an investment point of view, there's lots of innovation that can still occur and needs to occur to kind of help solve and protect companies from some of these problems.
Absolutely. And that's a great segue into our next question. What kind of characteristics do you look for when investing in companies? In other words, what makes a strong cyber company?
Yeah, it's a good question. Look, there's literally thousands of cybersecurity companies that are created every year. And so, it's a really busy job trying to meet as many of them as we can. But what we're really looking for are founders who have a kind of a deep understanding of the problem and are able to articulate that in terms of the customer problem and the customer benefit is probably the starting point for where we're interested. There's a lot of companies that get started and created who kind of don't or aren't able to articulate the customer problem that they're solving in a way that a customer would resonate with it and, you know, allocate budget and spend dollars on it. And then the second thing is really the team, who's in the team and what sort of capabilities do they bring to bear. And where we're investing, like the earliest investment we'll do is sort of, yeah, early revenues of a Series A type company. And so at that stage, you know, the company's built kind of an MVP, they've kind of priced it and they're in market, and sort of selling it, or have sort of design sort of partners around it, who are converting to sales. And so, you know, what's the bones of the team that are there, and how do they think about building it? You know, what's the culture of the company that they're creating, and how do they think about that? And how do they think about growing it? You know, what resources do they need, and why? And how are they thinking about go to market, and why? And then the last sort of dimension is really a function of the customer problem statement, which is, you know, how big is the market for what they are selling? And cyber is, you know, very, I'd say, cluttered market. There's a lot of companies vying for the attention of the CISO and their team. So we try to parse out and figure out, is this a real innovation that a customer will pay money for, or is it a sort of a feature extension of another platform? And therefore, you know, how many of these customers have this problem, and can we actually reach a bunch of folks in our network who might resonate with this, and resonate with the problem that's being solved, and can we sort of validate it that way? So really, you know, team, product, market, and then sort of trailing, because where we invest is generally some sort of early financials. You know, what do they look like? So yeah, it's a little bit organic as a process, but that's sort of the frame that we think about it in. The other thing I would say is we sort of think about where we think the ball is moving to, and try to find companies that are sort of operating in those spaces and are early in those spaces, and can help us validate how we think and invest in those guys.
That's great. And speaking of investing, I did want to ask, what does the cybersecurity VC space look like right now with the current macroeconomic trends?
Yeah, it's an interesting time. So where we invest, there's been a little bit of movement on a Series B company valuation, and a little bit of movement on a Series A company valuation. And that's sort of the most obvious effect. For companies in our portfolio or companies that are much later stage, there's been two huge shifts in both the valuation that they might expect, and also the amount of activity in that market from a venture point of view is much, much lower than it ever has been in the last decade. So for our first investments, or for our first checks, we're actually really active. We think this is still a very good time for us to invest. And, you know, when we invest at that stage, we're really thinking about, what does this company look like over the next decade? So there's some level of immunity to the short-term market sort of dynamics. But as you kind of go later stage, you know, those market dynamics become more and more important in how we think about working with our existing portfolio. This definitely, although this has changed in the last two quarters, there was definitely a period where lots of founders, lots of companies were trying to raise extensions to financings that they completed in 2021 and hold those valuations and try and buy more time by raising a little bit more capital. That sort of activity is dropped off pretty considerably in the last 2 months. And, you know, it's the right thing for those companies to do, because your time is everything in this sort of environment, and being able to, you know, extend the cash runway and survive through these sort of periods of instability is really important.
Absolutely. And I did want to shift gears a bit to talk about identity, since I know you've invested in some companies that are focused on that market. Identity has quite the buzz in the security industry right now, but is extremely complex. What are your thoughts around identity-based cyber threats?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, identity has been a really interesting place that we've made, you know, two or three investments in. We invested in Auth0 back in the day. We invested in a company called CloudNox that was looking at sort of privileged access and identity controls in infrastructure that Microsoft acquired. And we recently invested in another company called Strata Identity, which is really solving a problem around how organizations deal with the complexity of identity in their environments and, you know, migrate and modernize applications and move to the cloud, which I think is a huge issue. I still think there's lots of opportunity in the identity market, both as an investor and, you know, for sort of practitioners to do things. I think this move to sort of zero trust, if you like, and a trustless model is still, from an identity point of view, I think everyone sort of recognized that's the kind of keys to the architecture of that. But it's how do you build identity into some of the sort of business functions that you operate. So you want to make a change to ABC, you need to kind of hit your fingerprint or your thumbprint to kind of authorize the change. And how do you kind of build those sort of step functions into your sort of application architecture so that you can kind of create an audit trail, but also layer in higher levels of identity control into the kind of critical business functions that someone might have today, have a blanket privilege to execute on, but now you have a way to kind of protect yourself at another layer of protection. So I've been talking to a number of CISOs who were implementing some of those controls in their environments. And you know, what they believe is ultimately by creating those sort of step authentication and a step control functions, you make it harder for, you know, criminals to kind of move through an organization and make make changes that allow them to kind of move through an organization or to attack particular assets, whatever it's going to be. And so you steal a credential, but you still need to kind of deliver this sort of authentication moment as you want to make changes in that environment. So I think that's one sort of idea. And, you know, I think even in the SMB market, go use a password manager rather than just have folks using manual passwords. I think some really basic stuff that can be done. Go use LastPass or 1Password, just all the simple stuff around managing those environments. I don't know, there's a lot. There's so much to do in that space. It's still a big opportunity for lots of improvements to be made.
Yeah, it sounds like it will continue to grow and be a fascinating piece of the cyber market. So to wrap things up and looking ahead, what cybersecurity trends should our listeners keep top of mind for 2023?
There's sort of three things we're thinking about. I think, you know, if the broader market and the broader economic market continues to change for the negative, then I think there's this issue of cyber budgets are going to, I don't know if they're going to be compressed, but they're definitely going to be held flat. And so how do you prioritize the program of work and how do you prioritize your resource? And, you know, one of the ideas that we really like and we think people should invest in is around this sort of continuous validation of your security controls as a way to identify, you know, what to do and when as it relates to risk. So, you know, using tools to kind of give you the insight to sort of support that sort of prioritization. I think software supply chain sort of continues to be a topic that bubbles up, that people are interested in trying to solve. Third-party supplier risk continues to be, you know, a topic that continues to evolve and continues to be a source of risk and a source of, you know, problems for enterprises, and has been sort of a number of, you know, attacks and threats that have evolved over time through that. And we still see this sort of organizations are continually trying to digitize their environments. And I think if in that, in an economically more depressed world, that work is going to continue to occur because there's sort of economic benefits to it and you strip cost out. So how does the security team get on top of that and have the kind of tools and services wrapped around that so that they can understand, you know, the footprint of assets that they have? And probably the last one is around sort of API security. We've seen a bunch of breaches of late that are related to API security, and the proliferation of APIs is sort of a way of the future that's linked to that digitization and has been going on for decades. But, you know, there seems to be more exploits and more opportunities that for criminal behavior that bubble up through that. It's a bit endless, really. There's just so many things and so many problems to solve, but that's sort of what I hear and what I hear CISOs talking about, and the kind of areas that we think are continuing to evolve and sort of be interesting for folks in the industry.
There it is. Thank you, Marcus, for joining us. We'll definitely keep an eye on how the threats and cyber investment evolves with the current market. To all of our listeners, we'll see you next time.